let's head over to Mr. and Mrs. Future.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to Future Tuesday. This is where the day gets even more fun, especially as we bring Mrs. Future on to help create the content of the moment. The ambiance, the flow
the dialogue,
of information, ideas,
the
thoughts,
witty exchange,
memes that are important in this particular time.
Yes, well, I do like having fabulous conversations with you, my dear.
You too, sweetheart. I'm really excited. I'm getting a new toy today.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, and what would that be?
It's a robot. It's a robot, dear. It'll be around the house.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. This one is a spherical robot. It's round.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a robotic ball.
A robotic ball.
Control. And mm-hmm. It does facial recognition and all kinds of stuff.
You're kidding. It does facial recognition?
It does. Well, through the app.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking that it might be really good to try on Louie.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dog. We're house-sitting right
sitting.
Now. I'm thinking the
yes,
robotic
we have a
ball
visiting
and,
dog.
And the dog might have an interesting relationship. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what's possible there.
Well, dogs have been known to like balls.
They do. That's something where the audience, could really help with this. I'm interested in programming this robot to do the most fun dog tricks imaginable that would please not just us, but the dog as well. So I'm curious about your favorite things to do with balls and dogs, especially at the beach or little ones, too. This dog is a cockapoo. Yes, it's a cute little thing, and it seems to be very aware. It's always paying attention to what we're paying attention to. It wants to hang out wherever we are. It's raised by two of my nieces. He's very, very sweet to be around. So it's interesting to introduce him to technology in a new way. And I appreciate any feedback on dog tricks with balls.
Okay, there you go. And, of course, if you do want to call in with that information, you can call the show at 831-479-1080.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in terms of interesting news, I thought it was kind of cool that Amazon is putting out the Store of the Future this week, opening it to the public. You don't have to have checkout counters anymore.
Tell me about it. I saw a clip, maybe it was on 60 Minutes or something like that, of somebody just throwing groceries in a bag and running out like they were shoplifting.
It looks like you're shoplifting, but you're not.
Turns out Amazon knows exactly who you are and exactly what you're doing.
Our tracking technology is so good these days that you can go to a store and pick stuff up and take it out, and your card will be immediately zapped for the right amount.
So it's not even like at Home Depot or Safeway where you have to go to the self-checkout and show them the barcode.
Right.
How does this work?
Lots of cameras.
Lots of cameras.
Lots of cameras everywhere, uh-huh. Analyzing the whole situation.
I see.
Scanners. When you go through, it's like a BART turnstile. So it's picking up information from you as you walk into the store.
Mm-hmm.
Like your credit card numbers, identifies who you are, facial recognition, knows your account, and prepares to give you, the services that your account will give you access to, which is usually just about everything in the store.
So the store is watching you.
It is. It is. It's paying attention to who you are as an individual. Now, you could either be paranoid of this amount of tracking, or you could embrace it.
Or you could stay home.
Or
you don't have to go
home,
shop in the Amazon store.
Well,
that's wholly up to you.
The thing is that the tracking technology of today is so good that it's way beyond just surveillance and security anymore. It's useful for everyday things, like shopping, where you don't have to wait in a line.
Sure. That's popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
I was in a Safeway just the other day, and in Safeway, the only way you can do that self-checkout is if you have your club card.
Yeah.
You have to have your Safeway club card in order to use that service. And you also have to stop and show them the barcode of everything that you're checking out.
So there's
out
still
with
a few slowdown points. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're,
it's not this grab and run environment that they're supposedly going to have at the Amazon store.
Well, I ask you this, though. If we're suddenly able to have that much fluidity in buying stuff, what does that say about maybe the fluidity of the borders, the country borders? They're checkpoints. Country mm-hmm. borders are checkpoints where you exchange information mm-hmm. and then pass or whatever happens.
Right.
In many, many ways, the same thing from a digital point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people are thinking of the wall as a digital wall where basically surveillance technology is deployed more than anything else that is a physical barrier.
Yeah, and I think in nature we see this too. Biology, membranes. Membranes are like borders. Mm-hmm. Crossing, but they're biological borders.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we're moving more in a direction like that, where it's more fluid.
Uh-huh. So you think Amazon stores are planetary?
They're a reflection of a biological process. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I think so. It's more of a fluidic thing. We brought Bruce Lipton on. He talked about this, about how every molecule that comes in contact with a cell, the cell knows what to do with,
mm-hmm.
whether to turn it away, let it through, whether or not there was a request for that molecule, for that substance, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's constantly going on a cellular level in our bodies every second. So why shouldn't we have that level of capacity on a macro scale like we do between nation states?
Mm-hmm.
If we are biological organisms, that's what we do. Have good borders.
Borders.
Which are more like membranes. I just don't think we have embraced that idea of understanding borders yet. It's a future integration into the group mind about what borders are. Because we barely know what nation states are. Most people barely know the Constitution even, you know, so these things are new.
Hmm. So are you saying it's good to have more borders?
No, I'm just saying that the borders perhaps apply a biological metaphor to them for understanding what's going on.
Okay.
You know, when people pass through the borders. What is the actual process? If you're a nerd, you look at, you know, what is the actual information that is exchanged? Borders are interesting because it's a passing of information and molecules.
Mm-hmm.
Molecules being the cars, the material, the stuff, if you will. We do both.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you think Amazon stores are alive.
I think they're part of some larger process that will probably affect the way we think about governments and multinationals. It's
absolutely
going towards a biological metaphor.
Hey, as soon as Amazon bought Whole Foods, I'm sure everybody did a double take on how is our life going to be managed by this corporate life form, this corporate entity.
I guess some kind of super organism idea,
mm-hmm.
something along those lines. It's both exciting and disturbing at the same time. It's inevitable that we'll move in the direction of what Amazon's doing with stores, and that in the near future, most of our stores will be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's to stop it?
Yeah, efficiency keeps making things more automated, more efficient.
In the virtual worlds, when we put on clothes, we change fashions instantly. It seems like we'll get used to that as we play more in VR space. And then,
you know, there's people who really like the idea of blurring reality as if virtual reality and meat space reality are exactly the same. I'm not one of those people. I think of going to the movies as going to the movies. I think of sitting in a room as sitting in a room. So as much as I enjoy the entertainment of virtual reality and I enjoy immersing my senses in this timeless zone.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I do not consider that the same as reality.
They're not. They're very different. I agree with you at this point in time. It's just that when you bring in your imagination in and you can see how fast we're evolving virtual reality, we can see how there's a point where the interconnection between what is real and what is made up becomes very blurred. Maybe not even blurred. Maybe it's some other relationship, some connection where fantasy and reality are the same at some point where they become one.
Well, I think it's an exciting development for evolution that we have new ways to expand our imagination and new experiences that we can enjoy that allow us to learn new things, that allow us to pay attention in new ways, and that the virtual worlds do represent something that we have not had access to before.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's definitely an evolutionary frontier.
Yeah, it's fun to explore it, but I tell you, it really plays with your mind about thinking about stuff like this. We've been hanging out a lot, especially me lately, and I'm beginning to feel altered by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So far, so good. A little scary.
Does it make you feel shorter, taller? What? How are you altered?
My thinking is just a little different than
when you started.
I'm thinking about my thinking. Yeah, uh-huh. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate uh-huh. any feedback you might have.
Okay.
But it's a curious thing.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to think about your thinking while we go to a break, and then we'll come back with the Dr. Future Show here on KSCO. Stay tuned.
Nothing is real. Wasting my time in the waiting line. Do you believe in what you see?
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. I thought it was very interesting this week, the Wired article on forget the robot singularity apocalypse. Let's talk about the multiplicity.
That rings so true in my book. I think the multiplicity is really what's going on. The idea that robots are taking our jobs and replacing humans.
Well, that's the fear,
that
right?
Automation is going to make it obsolete to be human. All that is just nonsense.
Especially when the AI and the robots surpass those of humans. And they grow so advanced that civilization is just going to reboot into something else, and humans may be spiraled out into some existential dread somewhere.
Not happening.
No, you don't want that to happen.
Well,
that's the fear, right? That's the fear.
Movie director plot.
Exactly. That's
imagination.
That's where our minds think. That's where they go. Mm-hmm. Or we get turned into batteries, like in The Matrix, where we're just batteries for the machine. Now, is that really our future? Is that really what we're creating?
I have known some guys who would really like that to be their future. Yeah. There's a class of human that really thinks horizontal brain stimulation is a desirable life. I don't understand it myself, but I certainly know people who really project that would be heaven.
Yeah, well, most I don't. I think as fun as that sounds, there is a roboticist at UC Berkeley, Ken Goldberg, who thinks the whole idea is bunk. He says it's counterproductive. I think it's demoralizing and it's fiction. We're not even close to this level.
All right, Ken, I'm on your bandwagon.
So what's actually going on? The robot revolution is happening, mm-hmm. but it's not those scripts. It's not those narratives.
Okay, so what does it look like?
Well, he calls it a multiplicity, and he says this is not science fiction. The singularity,
instead of a singularity.
Yeah, singularity is science fiction. Multiplicity is reality. It's something that's happening right now. It's the idea that human and machines work together. The most obvious of that is every time you jump in your car. Right? And they work together. That's what we do. And that's the major nature of our relationship with machines. There are extensions to do what we want them to do in our world. Mm-hmm. And we're the ones in charge. Mm-hmm. Right? That's really what's going on.
Right.
And there's lots of machines, and there are all kinds of intelligences doing all kinds of purposes, and they're not any one overlord that's trying to mess with us.
Right. That's just a sci-fi script.
Yeah, so far.
Right. So what other things does this article have to point out about the multiplicity?
He says it's in all aspects of our life. It's not just driving your car, but say every time you boot up Google Maps or Apple Maps, if you prefer.
Well, that has had a huge impact on my life. Is
using maps.
Using maps.
Sure,
Apple
all of
Maps,
us.
Google Maps, and Waze. Those three things have pretty much changed the way that people get from here to there.
Yeah, I remember we used to have actual maps in a little drawer underneath the passenger seat.
I still love going to AAA and getting a map when we're going on a trip so that I feel like I can study the journey and think ahead. It's easier to do with a physical map.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to put an X on where you're going,
it's easier to
see the overview.
Easier to zoom out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bigger screen. We're used to a much wider screen than a little rectangle in our hand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a tough adjustment.
Yeah. We're used to a viewport that can go anywhere on the globe or even anywhere in the solar system.
That's the promise of augmented reality, where your glasses are on and your whole field of view ultimately is something that can be what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And almost superimposed on what is really there. The combination of reality with the computer world.
What are you trying to say?
It's getting to be where the two worlds, the computer world and the physical world, become part of what you're seeing all the time. They're both fully present. And that's the promise of augmented reality. That's the direction we're heading with that. So VR is where you're in another world. You're in a 360 world that's somewhere else. And then you can make that transparent and you can see the other worlds behind it.
I'll tell you, my experience in the virtual world is that the visuals are very convincing. You can actually experience vertigo if you look out over a balcony down,
there's that kind of
drop-off.
Altered thing.
However,
too,
the experience of being able to pick things up or go towards something is where it's very limited, because I feel like I'm in a scuba suit. I feel like my hands don't work very well. All I can do is bump into things. The way you use buttons is very kludgy. Often things don't work, so there's just a long way to go.
Oh, yeah, it is. And that's the thing, is that it's clunky right now, but it's like cars were clunky at first, but they'll speed up and they'll get way better, really fast, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the singularity comes in, because there's a certain amount of truth to the idea that things are speeding up and getting more and more connected, and we're having better and better communications. And what do we do with that communication? Well, we connect with each other on a global scale. And so we naturally have more of a global field of view of the world that's rapidly become normal. Like the millennials are all used to talking to friends all over the planet all the time,
mm-hmm.
all day. And now it's cheap, or free when you're using FaceTime or Google Duo, which is now trying to compete with FaceTime, or that Google's got their own video phone.
Oh, tell us about Google Duo. That's something new on my radar. I guess it's been out since 2016.
Yeah, they haven't been pushing it very hard. But it's another video phone app.
Mm-hmm.
In a growing field.
So it's Skype for Google. It's Messenger for Google. It's another company that's giving you a way to use the phone connected to the internet to make a phone call to somebody else.
Yeah, it's a tried and true thing that people want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We want to talk to each other wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
And the better the bandwidth, the better the quality of the image, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So Google's going to enter that game. And that's good. They have the resources behind it to do something really kick-ass with that.
Right.
So I hope to try it out. Now, what's new about them is that last week, they've opened it up so that you can call people that aren't on the Google network.
Oh, so you can just call anybody.
Yeah.
With your Google phone.
They have an
Duo.
iOS
it's an app
now. Yeah.
Okay. So
I have a link to it on our.
You can download
page.
The app for an iOS, and if you don't have an iOS, you can just do it directly from Google, and you can call anybody who has the app, or you can call anybody who has an Android, whether or not they have an app.
Yeah.
That's what the news.
Yeah, and if you're an iOS user, you can get a Duo app, so you can talk to your Android friends. With the video.
You know what I say to that?
What's that?
It's amazing. Listen, we have to go to our news break. So we'll be back after a message from Georgia and a few bits of news and sponsors.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, just to mention on the earthquake, we didn't feel it here, but there was a smaller little tremble not that far away, 3.5 San Benito. We're pretty safe so far from dealing with any major quake, in our realm. However, we are in earthquake territory and anything could happen to us. Our station is particularly designed to help with that process. If for any reason you actually lose internet connection or regular AC, you should be able to pick us up with a battery-powered radio, hopefully on both AM and FM, because we have these big generators out here that pick it up.
All right.
As that said, all is well in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Back to the news. There was a fascinating new entree into the rocket world called Rocket Lab.
Rocket Lab.
Yeah.
It sounds like a superhero or a comic series.
the new boy on the block, and they're a different niche of rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we had the big boys like Boeing and Northrop, the Delta rockets, $400 million a launch.
Mm-hmm.
Then along comes Elon Musk and is able to get it down to like around $100 million
mm-hmm.
for the same thing.
Right.
Well, these guys are not promising the same thing, but they're offering you to get a satellite in orbit for $10 million.
Wow. They could almost qualify for the Google Prize.
Just about.
So they
yeah, that's
have
another
little
interesting story
this week. Incy-beansy rockets?
Yeah, they've reached orbit for the first time. It's low Earth orbit. It's not like putting a satellite in geosynchronous orbit or anything like that, but more low Earth orbit. This is where the GPS sats are.
Okay,
and,
so
internet
Rocket
sats.
Lab.
So you could low Earth orbit be good for putting out internet.
And where example. Are Rocket Lab rockets?
Well, they launched
from.
It from New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
but they are an American company. They are looking at a maximum payload capacity of 500 pounds.
That's tiny.
Yeah, smaller than its peers.
Two people.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, this is people. Even lower than I thought. Each flight only costs $5 million.
Wow.
Of course, it helps that the two-stage launch vehicle is powered by Rocket Lab's Rutherford engines, which are cheap to manufacture. These engines are primarily composed of 3D printed components. 3D printed.
That's their secret. Okay. So they're not reusable, but they are disposable. That's what it sounds like.
3D. Well, easy to produce. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they lasted a long time, that would be even better.
Sure.
And they use battery powered electric motors, more efficient than the gas motors. That's why it only costs around $30,000 to send a CubeSat or a small payload on top of their rocket, the Electron. The Electron.
That's the name of their rocket, yeah. The Electron.
Yeah. $30,000. That's
rocket
all it costs.
Rocket Lab. Send the Electron to near-Earth orbit.
Send up your own CubeSat, $30,000. That's a small town project,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's something that conceivably could be raised by the Girl Scouts for doing something that was in the community interest.
So how much is it to launch a CubeSat?
$30,000.
$30,000. You could almost do a Kickstarter for that.
Yeah. Yes, right? It's getting affordable.
Yeah.
Well, it is affordable for a certain segment of the population.
Mm-hmm.
More for it. It's another layer of abundance. It's more opportunity for less.
Right. Citizen scientists. It's
almost
in the league of citizen scientists.
Citizen scientists rocket doing their own. Now, that's the holy grail, where you could just do it as a family affair. So they're about the fourth of the size of the Falcon 9. They have a capacity of 500 pounds and $5 million, and they've got 3D printed engines, and they blasted off from the company's own New Zealand base. They had a 10-day window in which to launch. They postponed a few times, and then they got it out there. And now they're looking at contracts with NASA and a company called Moon Express. Moon Express. Now, Moon Express is a lunar mining company.
It sounds like a milkshake drive-up. Moon Express.
Moon Express, yes.
Okay. So they're going
to
land on the moon.
And mine it. Yes, they've got plans.
With something the size of a CubeSat? Isn't a CubeSat just about 3 inches by
no,
3 inches?
No, you understand.
It's
they're
tiny,
not,
right?
You're mixing elements of the story here, my dear.
Oh.
They're part of the group that's working with Rocket Lab. That's their bigger goals, is to get mining equipment over there. They're looking for the cheap way to start to get there. So
they're going to start sending small parts of moon mining equipment.
I would imagine.
Something that weighs less than 500 pounds.
If they do it right, they'll do it for under $20 million and they'll get Google their prize, their lunar prize,
mm-hmm.
for that $20
million. Right.
And then they can have some corporate sponsors to take it over the top.
Yeah, tell people about Google's prize.
Not as quite a happy a story right now.
Yeah.
Google has been behind their own X Prize. They have a $20 million X Prize moonshot project.
Right.
They had promised $20 million to the first private company that could land on the moon, land like a little rover of some sort, and then roll around a little bit, and then beam
some pictures
a video back home saying, we're here, look at yourself.
Uh-huh.
Something like that. But it looks like no one has been able to do that yet for this $20 million prize. It's a hard goal.
that's been out there for probably 5 years at least, the offer?
Yeah, I think that sounds right, Mrs. Fuchs. They do not have plans to extend the deadline again. I guess they've been extending the deadline for a while.
Hoping somebody would land on the moon and take some pictures and collect the money.
If you can figure out how to do that for less than $20 million, you could make yourself a cool profit.
$20 million.
Yeah. Well, if it cost you $18 million to do it, you'd make two, which wouldn't be bad for, let's see, what's their deadline? March 31st. If you can figure that before March 31st.
The clock is ticking.
Then, hey, $20 million is yours right over the hill. So the Lunar XPRIZE Challenge, it was announced a decade ago. Mm-hmm. They head down to four finalists. But according to an anonymous source, one of the final four, one didn't have enough funding, and the other three weren't yet ready to launch.
Oh.
They needed more time.
Oh.
There's one Israeli nonprofit called Space IL. They plan to use a Falcon 9 rocket later this year, but they needed another $7.5 million to complete that plan. The other teams were called Synergy Moon, Team Indus, and Moon Express. None of them in a position to launch any time before March 31st. Oh. So they needed more time and needed more money, a little more excitement too, I think.
Seems to me China launched a lunar module onto the moon. I seem to remember Jade Rabbit or something like that.
Well, that was an actual government project, I believe.
Oh, so it has to be a private company that would
win
the
prize. Yeah, these are crazy space enthusiast fools who thinks they can send something to space for real.
Right. Okay. March 31st.
Your deadline
is running out.
$20 million is yours. Maybe if any of those anti-gravity stories were true. You hear all these conspiracy stories of how there was really a secret space program and that it still exists based on technologies that the aliens revealed to us in the 50s under Eisenhower and stories like that. And if that were true, then we'd have a whole other space program. We'd have humans all throughout the solar system already in place. And we wouldn't know about it, except through these crazy stories that we hear on the net. So what's real? What's truth there?
What's real? Yeah. Let's try and stick with what's actually real.
There's no stories on anti-gravity this week, sadly.
No, but the story that you have on Mercury and the Sun is a story that is actually confirming of the constant that gravity is. Apparently in the physics community, there is a small question about whether gravity is actually a constant or whether that's debatable. And in one of your stories, the research being done with Mercury and the Sun has given a little bit of an insight to that question.
That's right. It's supposed to be measuring the age of the solar system too, and then our sun's getting more middle-aged.
Yeah.
And suddenly develop a middle-aged bulge. And by studying that bulge, we're learning about the aging process of the solar system.
That's right. So we're going to come back to that story after this break. Stay tuned. Dr. Future Show will be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, this story caught your attention too, Mrs. Future, quite strongly, I thought.
Well, I always like articles about the sun.
The title reads, NASA team studies middle-aged sun by tracking motion of Mercury.
This article is really well written. It's very funny to think about our sun as being this middle-aged star that's bulging at the belt.
I know, it's like, what are we, a Homer Simpson star or something? So as the waistband expands, the planets expand too. They go further out.
Right. So they've actually been measuring how much the pull of the sun releases over time. And that's one of the studies that's been happening since this messenger probe was sent to Mercury.
Yeah. Now, how do we study this? Well, our scientists sent a probe in orbit around Mercury, the closest planet to the sun. And as it orbits around Mercury, it gets nice shots of the sun as it's going by. And it can really look at the details, you know, all the photographic information, of course, but also X-rays and infrared and gravity waves, gravity fields.
Yeah, and
gravitational
so
shifts.
This satellite is sort of parked in an orbit where it can always measure Mercury at perihelion, which is when Mercury is closest to the sun. And since Mercury is so small and so close to the sun, of course, it's very sensitive to all of the forces of the sun pulling
right there. Yeah, so close.
Yeah. And so the messenger satellite has been able to measure how much Mercury responds to the sun and analyze whether that is part of Mercury's normal orbit, whether that's because of the sun's pull and gravity.
How Mercury is buffeted by the sun's activities.
Yes. It's also possible that Mercury is responding to solar events like solar flares, solar bursts, solar weather. So the team of scientists at NASA has been able to get more accurate information about Mercury and the sun than ever before. The interesting thing about the sun having a bulge is that the sun isn't like other planets where it has a really easy, simple axis at the center of its orbit. It's actually moving around more irregularly than that. So there are times when a fatter part of the sun is pulling on Mercury, and there's times when a thinner part of the sun is pulling on Mercury.
With different effect.
And so all of these things were able to be very precisely measured and then
mapped out and
extracted
and create a nice little map of right. the energy of that part of the solar system and how it all works. And extrapolate that to the rest of the solar system, and hey, we have a deeper understanding of how this system we're in works. I think they were finding out that it's holding up pretty well, that our sun, for its age, is in pretty good shape.
Yes. In fact, what they realized is that they were able to use actual observed evidence instead of theoretical evidence from, say, Einstein's theory of relativity to predict how much solar mass the sun is losing every year.
Because of all the hydrogen fusion reactions going on, it's slowly going to lose its
Think of it
juice.
As like a big helium balloon in outer space that's got a slow leak. So it loses a fraction of a percent of its mass every 10 billion years or so.
Yeah, and it takes another 10 billion before it dies.
Right. So what they found out is that the sun is losing its solar mass not quite as quickly as they thought. So the sun will actually live a little bit longer than previously expected.
Wow. Is our species responsible for that, do you think? Did we increase the life expectancy of our solar system?
Well, we created the idea of expectancy, so I suppose we also increased it, but only because we're the ones talking about it. Yeah. I mean, the sun is going to do what the sun is going to do.
Well, we'll take credit for it. At least we're paying attention, sort of, not with as much humility as some would like, but yeah, that's the thing, is that why aren't scientists more humble and spiritually aware of things?
What makes you say that? I think many scientists are humble and spiritually aware. Not all, but many are.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more the norm rather than the exception. It's kind of like rational, logical thinking had to be separate from issues of faith. But they're not,
so.
Right? And there's no such thing as separation as we know at this point in time. So,
yeah. I think the more scientifically aware you are, the more in awe you are of all that is.
Yeah. To embrace the idea of a decentralized God consciousness is an interesting one. For example, like biology seems to be decentralized intelligence. So it's everywhere. That's what we're part of. When there's a multiplicity, then there's often followed by singularity or singleness. So the next level would be seeing how everything is connected. Like we're one species. Everyone is unique, but we're one species. And what makes that unique oneness? You know, then you go into another multiplicity. Anyway, I didn't want to get too lost in that, but it's a many-to-one paradigm that happens in universe. And that's a description of one of them that we're dealing with here between scientists and spiritual thinking. Back to Mercury.
Yes, Mercury and the
back
sun.
Back to Mercury, yes.
From the multiplicity back to the unique position of our closest planet to our
That's exciting.
Best star.
I really like to know our star more. I like to feel like we all have a personal relationship with our sun. I think it's interesting we all have eyes to look at the sun. Not look at it like in a bad way, but just to be aware of it. The fact that we have a direct connection with it, with a fusion energy, the energy of creation of universe itself. Many would consider it a god, the sun itself.
Well,
the first gods of our species.
This particular story interesting to me is that NASA's team has a new estimate about the rate of solar mass loss, but it represents the first time that this value has been based on observations rather than theoretical calculations. And the numbers are just amazing. We're talking about over 10 billion years, the 0.1% of the sun's orbit, of the sun's mass, is enough to reduce the star's gravitational pull and allow orbits of the planets to spread by about 0.5 inch. So just the scale of what NASA is learning from being able to use radio waves to measure the orbit of Mercury around the sun is amazing to me.
I bet you whoever the scientist designed that probably read Dune as a kid.
Could be.
Is Frank Herbert was one of the interesting sci-fi writers who saw the sun as being a being.
Yeah, the Caliban experiment was one of my favorite books that he wrote.
Yeah, mine too as a kid, right? The Caliban, the sun was an intelligence that we had to reckon with, or was part of us, but it was definitely something that was our...
Yeah, it was an alien overlord.
There's one way of looking at it, but it's not that alien being our sun, but it is from our human point of view.
We have a caller who'd like to say something about this.
Okay, sure.
All right, let's say hello to... Gina?
Hi,
Norma Jean. Wow, it's been a long time. Nice to hear your voice.
I know, I wanted to talk to you guys. Yeah, well, what's happened, I feel I have a personal relationship with Mercury. Unfortunately, it's not very good. It's not a good relationship.
Sorry
to hear that. Oh, why? What happened?
What happens with you and Mercury?
Well, this last, actually, when it was coming out of Mercury, it always hits me really hard the week before, the week after. Coming out of Mercury on December 5th or 6th, I fell again in my own house and was always hit twice, and I broke my femur.
Oh, dear.
Well, which is the one that it goes from the hip down to the knee.
Oh, no.
But the medical wonder thing is they just opened my skin a little bit on the knee, and somehow they got this 14, 15-inch titanium rod up in my leg. So I have a lot of titanium on both sides of the body, like the robot woman.
Oh, no, you're bionic, are you?
Yeah, I feel like, but the good thing about it is I want to talk to you offline later about the vitamins, because I just came out of Pacific Coast, anyway, it was care home. These therapists said I'm good vitamins. So I wanted to kind of give them samples of our high energy one that I really love.
Absolutely.
I can't remember the name.
Okay, we need to get them some longevity samples.
Blue Bound,
huh?
I guess it is.
Sounds great, Norma.
Yeah, but Blue Bound. Okay. I'm going to have my son come in and get some of the Octavite for me.
Okay.
So my mind is clearing up. Before it was all mixed up, at least my mind's clearing up. So sometimes that's the only thing good about the fall. It cleared my mind, but broke my bone.
Oh, well, I hope you're feeling better. I hope you're healing.
I'm feeling better. Okay. No, I'm down here with my wonderful friends that are just taking care of me and they're boarding care home.
All right. Well, listen, I'll give you a call after the show, Norma Jean, and see if I can help you get some of that stuff together.
I'm glad to talk to you again.
All right, sweetie. Thanks. Bye-bye. Nice to hear your voice. All right. So we're down to the wire here, and we're going to go now to our news and traffic and weather break.
Yes, we have our digital nomad coming in.
Right.
From the road. We have a report from him coming up in the next half an hour, Shannon Leonard. And he's been exploring cryptocurrency of late, too. He's going to have a millennial report on crypto as part of what he's going to share with us. It'll be right after the news.
All right, everybody. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show here on KSCO Santa Cruz.